Welcome to Bad Dad's Film Review, the podcast where a bunch of middle-aged men share their opinions, insights, and insults while occasionally discussing films, kids' TV, and stuff we watched in our childhood. Nothing is sacred, nothing is off-limits, and nothing is funny. Just to be absolutely clear about this, we're not wishing you a happy new year, even if you are a regular listener, because it will be the middle of January by the time this episode goes out, which is way outside the statute of limitations, I think, on when it's acceptable.
It would be weird,
so we're not doing that.
Happy New Year.
If you were on Discord, you would have already been wished that.
Yeah.
Earlier.
Multiple times.
Yeah. Do join us on there.
Join us on Discord. That's the place to be, yeah.
We should also do a Bad Dad letterboxed, I think.
I've actually got one.
But we should do a Bad Dad one.
There is one.
Oh, okay.
There is one, and I put there, and I rated a bunch of movies that you lot would all disagree with. Yeah. So Patterson, I think I gave four stars, 4.5 stars too. And
I'm down with that just to troll Pete.
Yeah. So dispensing with those kind of greetings, let's instead take a look at this week's content, which starts with the top five lunches, where we'll reveal our favorite ways to clog our arteries and shorten our lives. And then after that, we'll take on Apple TV's The Greatest Beer Run Ever, starring Zac Efron and Russell Crowe in a dramedy based on the true story of a Vietnam War veteran who smuggled beer to his friends on the front line. And who knows, maybe we'll discover an at times surprisingly nuanced and thoughtful movie underneath that glib frat boy style comedy premise and title. And finally, we'll wrap things up with a look at Little Lunch, an Australian mockumentary series following the hilarious antics of a group of kids during their 15-minute breaks. All that's left to do is introduce the dads. We've got Chris, the most handsome and charming of the group. He's so good-looking, he makes the rest of us look like extras from The Hills Have Eyes. We've also got former professional footballer turned animal botherer Dan, who remembers when cinema tickets cost a shilling and you could get a bag of popcorn and a hand job for a sixpence.
How's your washboard?
Yeah. And we've got Sidey, you're of course using the new year to launch your new podcast, aren't you? Fisting the Night Away, the history of puppetry. Tell us a little bit about that.
You've got the right gist with the fisting bit, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice, tune in.
Nice.
And then there's me, Reeks. Hello.
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 Hi.
Yeah. So what's anyone been watching?
Oh, we've been binge watching an Apple TV Plus Gold Platinum thing called Invasion.
Okay. How many seasons into that are you?
There are two seasons, and we've got the last one of season two. Ooh. Left to go. They're like hour-long episodes. It lulls you in by saying that Sam Neill's in it.
Okay.
And spoiler alert, he dies in the very first episode.
Oh.
And he doesn't come back in
not yet, unless he comes back at the very end of season two, but I haven't seen him yet. So it's a largely unknown cast.
Okay.
And really, really bleak.
Okay.
Which I'm quite enjoying. Yeah, it's good.
It's held your attention.
Yeah, okay.
For two seasons. You've got a third season of that coming out then? Or?
No, I think we're going to do Monarch next and then Slow Horses. But last night I started watching RoboCop.
Okay.
The new one. It's not that new. It's 2014 or 2016.
I keep thinking I'm going to do it for the pod.
I couldn't even be bothered to get to the bit where he becomes RoboCop. It's that bad.
Well, that's maybe we should
that's
do it for
tempting
the pod.
The
only way I will,
it is a bit. Yeah.
The only way I will finish it is if you nominate it because I turned it off. It was garbage.
Well, I keep thinking about doing it back to back. I love the original one so much, and I would keep thinking about doing it back to back. So, no, obviously, it's nowhere near as good, but it might have interesting things to say as well when I watch it.
I think it was trying to, but I just. Dan?
Anyway. The Slow Horses you mentioned there, I have completed three seasons pretty smart, actually, as well, pretty quickly. And because it was. Fantastic. Mm. It was, really hits the mark. Good storytelling, great characters, fantastic acting, like Ullman's. Mm. Yeah, he'll win something for that because he was fantastic in it. I also watched Luther, which is...
I've only ever watched the season one, episode one.
Yeah, well, I watched that. And I watched the film, actually, first. There was a film.
I watched the film as well. I've seen it a
so
while
So I watched
ago.
The film, and I thought, oh, that was okay, actually. And I'll see the programs. And so I watched season one, episode one, which is this serial killer lady who kills her. She's, like, so clever.
Yeah.
She can't be caught. And they've got no evidence. And she starts threatening his wife then and
he,
you know
but
and
you
it
get,
just kind of ends yeah, yeah
I did good. Watch the first like maybe season and a half and you get these long overarching plots that go across the whole season and then these little individual like weekly
well, you got the feeling that she was gonna turn up in later episode. And the other thing I watched was Queen Pins on Netflix, which is the true story of a two women that had a massive coupon scam in America. And basically all the coupons, you know, buy one, get one free and things, they were collecting them. She was super collecting, brilliant. All right. Then she wanted to upscale it and she started going over to Mexico where they make the prints of the, and just getting
just getting them in bulk
and just getting
from the
boxes like of them, and then boxes became pallets and suddenly they're making like millions and millions of pounds. And there's one little kind of coupon supermarket guy who just won't let it go. He's like, I don't understand why, you know, you shouldn't have this. It's perfect. I don't understand how this coupon could be so sort of good. And he goes to, he wants the FBI involved and he wants, you know, the postal team. Vince Vaughn comes in as one of the postal officers and it was good actually. It was decent that. So if you see that on Netflix, don't shy away.
I've watched quite a few bits because I have not seen you last week. But between Christmas and New Year's, I didn't work. So I had loads of time. I watched Oppenheimer, which was very good. I've watched Killers of the Flower Moon, which I thought it wasn't that good. It was quite boring, actually. I've watched a movie called Marlowe. I think I told you something about that with Liam Neeson.
Philip Marlowe.
Like a private 1940s dick. Private dick. It was quite... And with Diane Kruger, and she
was that good. I've seen that.
It's slow. In he's not, you know, he's like an old guy, so he's not going to turn into James Bond. But
well, sometimes he does, doesn't he?
Well, that's what I mean.
This is a different character.
He's not. This is not Taken. He's not actually involved with the Albanian mafia. He's more just kind of 1940s private detective in L.A., which is. It was all right actually, but it's a bit of a slow burner. And I've watched there's so many of them that I can't really, they all kind of blur into one. But I have to say I've watched Saltburn, which again was very good. I thought it was really, really good. Quite strange, obviously, and a bit disturbing at some points, but really good. I thought it was really good. So
I could be into that.
How about you, Riggs?
Severance, we have been watching, which is pretty good. We're on episode 4, about to start episode 4, I think. Needs to stop being so weird and give a few answers. But yeah, enjoying it. Andrew Scott, I think is the guy's name.
I started watching that, but it did. It was, I think I was 2 episodes in and I still felt I should be knowing more than I know now.
Well, maybe I'm okay with a slow burn, but when there's some interesting stuff.
I don't
going.
Mind, yeah, a bit of a slow, but you've got to start getting into it because they're hour-long episodes as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
So
he was looking so smooth at the Golden Globes last night.
Who?
Andrew Scott.
Was he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
He's quite a funny-looking guy in this. Like, he's got a weird chin.
Oppenheimer came out as a winner, didn't it?
It swept the biggies,
I thought it was really good. And the way he's done it... He kind of twists the story on his head. It was really good. It's not much happening. So that's why I can compare it to The Flower Moon for me, because I kind of watched them in the same week. And they're both kind of fairly long, very similar in length.
It's wild to think that that's taken nearly $1 billion at the box office. Yeah. The subject matter, 3-hour-long character study of an atomic physicist.
Yeah, with like multiple boardroom scenes.
That's what I'm going to say is it's a lot more interesting.
You see his dick?
Oppenheimer's, yeah, you do.
I don't know. I didn't really look at him.
You do.
You do? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Everybody's talking about Dick. Cillian Murphy.
Killian.
Yeah, but again, compared to the Scorsese one, one is just...
More dicks.
But no dicks.
Yeah.
Loads of Indians.
I'm out.
The dick to Indian content is...
Yeah.
It's not.
It's off.
I know who's winning on that one.
Yeah. Also, what I did want to talk about is you're wearing, is that an actual hoodie?
It's an hoodie, yeah.
An hoodie.
Yeah.
Right. That, and so, and you got an hoodie, I got an hoodie like you know, name brand replacement, very good as well. The hoodie, have you got an hoodie?
Oh, sorry, is it an actual brand thing?
Yeah.
This is the next one. It's just an equivalent, but it's the oversized hoodie. Yeah,
blanket, wearable blanket.
Oh, is that what it's called? I thought, I didn't know what you're asking
me. Yeah, you know, the sort of thing, it's pockets big enough to store your phone, your snacks, your dignity. I have got one. I would just wear it all the time if I could.
Yeah, now. I want to wear this to work.
Yeah, but I never really had... Yeah. Fad clothing.
Yeah, you before, don't really have. You just feel like you're in your pajamas all the time, don't you? It's nice, comfortable. Just yeah.
But the actual Udi brand, it's like made out of recycled Sherpas or something. Like,
does it cost a £150 for one? Whereas this, was
you could
£20.
Actually get like a really decent coat for that, or like a bottle of whiskey and a rope.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay,
either or.
I'm down with that. Should we just talk about top fives?
Yeah,
let's do it. Top five lunches, Dan.
Yeah.
Is this brought on by the kids thing?
I think it was just around lunchtime when we started talking about what we should watch.
Cool.
I thought that's what it was.
Yeah, yeah, I think it might have been on my mind.
Do you want to give us an amuse-bouche?
Okay, well, it's a film that, because lunches are really, you know, in every high school film that you see, so we could choose lots of different examples of that as well. The one that instantly went in my head, with I didn't even have to look up, was the Wivenall lunch when they're in Penrith and in the tea rooms and they're, you know, they're horribly drunk in a very stuffy tea room and telling people, you know, we're going to install a fucking jukebox in here and we're multi-millionaires and we're going to buy... Because we've all had a few drinks at lunchtime sometimes, which is...
Day drinking.
You feel great.
It's different.
It's day drink. It's lovely, isn't it? You know, when you've had a bottle of wine or something and you realise it's still daylight outside and you're getting a little bit louder. Well, these guys did all of that and more.
Sorry.
No. Please sneeze ahead. And sorry. So
it just looks a little bit like you're giving a Nazi salute when you sneeze. I
want to get the attention, so I don't cut.
He's a Lazio fan.
I know, but the moustache part is unnecessary, I think.
Sorry, it's not on purpose, though, and it's not. I'm not doing that, just so you know.
But there's a couple of, in Wivenall, there's a couple of lunch scenes, actually, because they go back with Uncle Monty back to the house as well. And they're battling with a chicken that they have to stick on a brick. And one of them's got to kill it. It goes, well, there's the chicken. One of them's got, I'll kill it and pluck it.
He's battling with more than just the chicken, really.
With a little bit more than that, yeah. So that was my first one to kick us off. I know that's a film we've talked about before anyway, and we've done a review on it.
Cool. Chris?
I'm going to be on Dan's point with lunches in prisons.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if you have it saved or not, but you could name, I don't know, 10 movies that there's some bit that happens in prison and that's part of a lunch. The only one that I can...
So in prisons, you've got loads of things like plans being set up or people being shivved, you know, all that sort of stuff going on in movies, loads of examples. I wish I had like at least one.
The one that I have is Law Abiding Citizen.
Yeah.
When he orders, he's like, oh, this, whatever, this restaurant, they deliver, order me this steak at this time. And then he actually has a T-bone steak with his cell partner, finishes the steak and stabs the cell partner in the neck with the actual bone.
Yeah.
So I thought that would be the one to kind of stand out. But this squad is in Shawshank, they're in Goodfellas, they're in prison. There's a few of them that are...
Well, you watched Escape Plan, right?
Yeah.
Stallone, that must have had some lunchtime prison shenanigans.
Yeah, they're
that's all... when they meet, I think.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger and Stallone at the lunch kind of...
So many lunch trays have been spilt in prison, haven't they?
Yeah.
When they're walking along, they've got their army trays and it's just... Mm. Yeah.
It might even be in Watchmen, I think, when Rorschach is in the prison mess hall and, you know, he screams at that guy as he throws boiling fat on him.
That's right, yeah.
You don't understand, you're stuck in here with me.
That guy dies, yeah. I'm actually rereading that at the moment. Fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, strong.
So, yeah, that was pretty good. And similar to the prison is the cafeteria at school, like you were talking about. And
yeah, it is similar.
You got like the loner, you know, maybe the kid hasn't made friends at school, so he sits by himself, or maybe they've been ostracized.
All
for some
the jocks
part.
Sat on one table, or you've all got the cheerleaders
or you can have
on another.
Romantic version, or you can have the bitchy Mean Girls one, where they...
Oh, you've got like in Napoleon Dynamite when...
Oh, no, shh!
Have you got it? He goes over to see Deb.
No, I haven't got that. I've got it.
She's got like a massive blob of mayo on her lip. And he goes over to sort of chat her up. And he's like, oh, are you drinking 1%? You don't need to. You're not fat. Like, she's just eating. She just walks off. Oh. Yeah.
No, I have got Napoleon Dynamite, but it's part of a subset about tater tots that I've got.
Okay, yeah.
So Simpsons, I could think of two separate tater tot conversations.
Yes.
One is a later episode where Lisa tries to put tater tot on a fork and it flies off and hits another kid in the face, and she gets put in detention, which she then runs like a prison.
Yeah,
and
but it's Ralph.
And there's an earlier one where Principal Skinner is eating tater tots and he says, say what you want about the school cafeteria, I still think they're the best tater tots money can buy.
Yeah, nice.
And then Napoleon Dynamite, he's eating tater tots and he's got them in, he's wearing like a pantsuit thing, like, I don't know, like a play suit.
Yeah.
And he's got a zip-up pocket on the side where he's getting tater tots out and eating them at his desk.
Yeah.
And the kid opposite him is like, give me some tater tots. Like, no! And he just gets his foot and fucking squashes
them all. Yeah.
And he has a little freak out. It's so weird, that film, but great. So yeah, little tater tot subset.
Good lunch.
And for those of us that don't know what a tater tot is,
it's like a really processed ball of potato, like a tiny little, smaller than a ping pong ball, that's then deep fried and so made crunchy.
Right, okay. They serve them in
yummy
schools.
Yeah. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Also, you've got in Spider-Man, Mary Jane does the slip and all of
it. He catches it all.
He catches it and he actually... Did that? No, he actually did. Honestly, did.
Really?
It took him 156 takes.
No.
Honestly, this is true. I thought everybody knew this.
I
wasn't going to bring it up. Yeah, no, he actually did it. It took him 156 takes. They put a load of sticky stuff on the board.
That's
so
amazing.
That when it did do it. Yeah. So yeah, they actually did that scene. So that's why it looks so fucking cool, man.
Yeah.
And imagine you've got to like not ruin the shot by going like, oh, fucking hell. Like... So yeah.
Is it coming back around to me? Well, Platform, a movie that we watched not so long ago, and although it wasn't everybody's lunch, it was a pretty weird one. It would have been somebody's dinner or somebody's, but as the platform of rich foods drops from floor one down to, like, what was it? It went down to like 200 and something.
Oh, it was well beyond that in the end, wasn't it?
And the plot of that film, if you're not familiar with it, was each floor was its own kind of prison cell with a big hole in the middle where this platform would drop down with loads of food. And as it got further and further down, there was obviously less and less food on it. And also the arseholes on top would often spoil the food for those below.
Yeah.
And then every few days, they would all be knocked out and wake up on a different floor. And that might be higher up, meaning that they would get better food and more options, or lower down, which meant they got fuck all. It was a weird movie. It was really good, though. It was one of those movies that it just kind of sticks with you a little bit afterwards. And yeah, the thought of enjoying lunch with a load of shit and piss over it was very real for some of them as they looked down this kind of nightmarish dystopian tower block.
Well, yeah, also
prison,
you know,
hell,
something something anti-capitalist and all that Chris,
I've got the, sorry about my absolute cold, but I just can't control it. There's a scene in Goodfellas, I know I said it earlier, when they're in prison, but there's a scene when Ray Liotta's making lunch and he's all coked up and he's
towards the end
the end, and then he kind of just,
he's got helicopters,
he abandons lunch and then he just thinks that he's being chased. And I thought that's a pretty good scene in a pretty good movie.
Yeah, the one in prison, I don't know if that's dinner where they're...
Yes, it's dinner where they cut the garlic.
It's very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool, but I think
qualify,
that's them having dinner in the...
Yeah.
Well, we're big fans of Colin Farrell.
Huge.
And I know we've all watched his 2005 sex tape a few times with Playboy playmate Nicole, and he famously growled he was going to go down on her for breakfast, lunch and fucking dinner, which became a meme type thing, shared meme forever. I remember that in the glory days of the internet. What else did I have? Oh, Naked Lunch. Got it right there in the title. Cronenberg, 1991. It's sort of about an exterminator who likes to get high on his pesticides, but he might also be a secret agent, and his boss, who's a giant talking beetle, gives him the mission of killing his wife. Pretty strange when you've seen that one, right?
Yeah.
Based on the book of Burroughs' Burke, and, you know, I personally would not have invented a sort of insect typewriter hybrid that comes, but he's the genius. He's,
like. You know, yeah, I've got another Cronenberg one. Existence?
Yeah.
It's Jude Law when he was bearable, and he's having lunch in a Chinese restaurant, but he's served a bowl of kind of like bones and gelatin, and yeah, it's like completely horrendous. But he does eat it, and when what he's left with is various bits of organic material that he pieces together.
It's the bones.
It's a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an organic bone gun.
Yeah.
And he's playing, he's in a kind of video game, and yeah, he needs the gun to be able to complete the game.
Yeah.
I saw this at cinema. It's all really sort of Matrix-y, fucking crazy.
Yeah. Without the sort of kung fu and more weirdness.
Who's the lady in it?
Margaret Thatcher?
Yes, that's her. Yeah, yeah. She's good in this.
She's good.
Better than she was in Prime Minister, I would say.
Yeah, she wasn't in Dumb and Dumber, but Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels was, and they play a couple of stupid characters. At one point, he
Harry
throws the salt shaker behind him for luck, doesn't he? Yeah. And he hits a guy called Seabass.
Seabass, yeah.
Kick his ass, Seabass.
Who's really angry over this and takes it as an insult.
Yeah, because he's closeted. There's a message there.
Yeah. And they play... Well, he's actually a hockey legend, isn't he, that guy?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. He's Cam Neely. He's a hockey legend. But he's like a country bumpkin in this, and, as you say, a closeted one. But they do the old trick on him where he goes, look, let me... It's the smartest thing any of them have ever done, isn't it? He goes, let me get you some beers. And then he goes over and tells the waitress, they're picking up the tab. And she kind of just goes, are you sure about that guy? That guy? And he kind of waves it over. Yeah, the beers are over here, like, you know, whatever, it's Chirana. And he goes, okay, then. And they head off. It was, yeah, probably the smartest part of the film on their behalf.
Very good.
The last one I've got is, I don't know if it's actually lunch, it's a strudel in Inglourious Basterds, when the girl, I can't remember her name, the blonde French girl, comes to lunch and to meet Goebbels, and she gets sat down, and then she wants to leave, and then Christoph Waltz's character just sits her down. She's like, yeah, we're gonna have a chat here.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can, it's just like really nicely filmed, and the tension is like, oh, wait for the cream.
Yeah.
And I thought that was actually quite cool.
What, are you saying it's more like a high tea, maybe? It doesn't count because it's not lunch.
Yeah, it's not lunch.
Well, I've got a brunch, so I didn't know whether
but
that
it does
counts,
count as or... I think it looks like it's around lunchtime.
Yeah.
So I thought,
yeah, I'd allow it.
Okay, thank you.
Can I have a brunch?
Yes.
There's one in Justice League. That's the race between Superman and the Flash at the end. The winner buys brunch or whatever, loser buys brunch. So, yeah,
okay.
You're not going to have top five brunches, I wouldn't have thought, are we?
No, definitely not.
What else? Colin, no, Falling Down.
Yeah.
It was explicitly
about breakfast versus lunch.
Yeah, it was.
He was a minute
breakfast.
Too late, wasn't he?
No, you got to order from the lunch menu.
Yeah. He's like, wow. Yeah, he
sent him over the edge.
He's a bit too far.
Stealing lunch money is something that they do in, particularly in American dramas, a lot. Again, can't think of any. But
I used to do that in real life.
Used to steal people's lunch money.
Or get it stolen.
It's like in
I never got it stolen because I never had any money.
Right, so
you
steal
the only way was to actually steal
it's
them.
The only
doggy
way.
Dog.
Was,
doggy
whenever
dog
I haven't got any money, it's the only way I know.
I have become a bit of a kleptomaniac in my old...
What have you started stealing?
From a large supermarket chain, I always steal something. There's a flaw in their system, and I frequently, as in always, steal something.
Exploit it.
I've been known to acquire glasses on a drunken night out, but other than that, I try to keep my hands to myself.
You going ahead of me?
No, please.
I'll
rattle through a couple.
Our second ever review was the film Chef, and that is a food truck, which generally at the time they were serving seemed to be around lunchtime. And that was recently in the news because the real life, they have now that real life film truck is in Vegas at the MGM Hotel. That's cool. An entire series on BBC that moved to Sky was The Trip, where they constantly go out eating. I think the first series was all lunches. We talk about it a lot, so I'm not going to go into it anymore.
Well, you got the famous scene in Harry Met Sally where Meg Ryan has this kind of orgasm reaction in the diner as she's talking to Harry and saying how easy it is to fake orgasms and that. Yeah. And then you get Rob Reiner's mum with the kind of classic line of, I'll have whatever she's having. Mm. But yeah,
just another... can never get on with Billy Crystal. I just
I really
dare.
Like him. You know, City Slickers kill and him. All that. I don't want to kill him. There's A Christmas Story, Christmas Lunch. I know it's another one that you like. The dog ravages all the food for Christmas lunch, and they have to go to the Chinese restaurant for dinner. There's actually another one. I was so tempted to. I'll wait till summer before I. You know, elect it to.
There's a sequel, isn't
there? There's a sequel where he's grown up, and it's the same actor, Ralphie, but he's now the dad. You know, so I've.
But that's a real treat.
I bet it is, and I hope one day we can all settle down and watch that together. There's Groundhog Day as well, where he keeps having the same kind of lunch, and he's learning from people about, you know, their life. So when it comes to it, and you realize a few scenes later when he's trying to speak to the lady in it, which I forget her name, Andy McDowell, and he says, well, you know, she's got a sister and, you know, he's got a brother over there and they've done all this. So he's got all their background stories for everybody to prove that he's lived this same day over and over and over again, but it's in the diner around lunchtime.
Yeah. Cool. Right.
I haven't got any more, so don't look at me.
I was late putting this out onto Discord, but we have the ever reliable and very excellent Darren Leithley has recommended. He's recommended Mr. Creosote, and they say good afternoon to him.
Third sneeze.
They say to him good afternoon, thus proving that it is a lunch. Meal.
Yeah.
And we know how that meal goes. So that's that. Right. Let's whittle this down. Dan?
I'm going to put in Platform.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
Chris?
I will say a law-abiding citizen.
I am going to say we went to see what, dare I say, was film of the year, Paw Patrol, the mighty movie. Do you remember that? And at the beginning of the trailer for that, there's a bit where he says, when our world is threatened, one team is ready to launch and rubble, the fat yellow one that used to say Meeg was like a sexual deviant for. Yeah. He says, did he say lunch? So that was the gag, getting the words launch and lunch mixed around.
Right, brilliant. I'm going to put in Napoleon Dynamite's Tater Tots.
Nice. And then we'll get two from the listeners. No, one. Just one.
We get two if we want.
Let's get two.
We can do what we like.
Beers and beer,
well,
running.
We've got beer run.
We've beers got, running and war.
We've got food to accompany the beers.
Yeah.
Well, right. Okay.
We've got a few Christmas leftovers that I brought in. I've got a luxury Stollen. And then some
that
hotel.
Looks heavy.
Is that Stollen? Is that like that log?
It's like it's a sponge, but it's quite heavy sponge, and it's got marzipan whirled into it. That you can get different ones that are less luxury and more slaggy, and I actually prefer those ones.
Vine fruits, hand rolled with marzipan. And
I don't want someone's hands
to have been
all over it.
Is that an M&S
one? I'm not really into them. I must say, but I know people that are.
We might have a slice later on. And then Chris, you've brought us some cracking sweet selection.
You've done well with the fizzies, the sour fizzy sweets, which are always going down well.
That segues really well into this week's
fizzy
movie, which is the greatest beer run. That's a huge claim. I don't think you're allowed to advertise over here like that. You have to say leading. You can't say we're the best company.
Yeah,
right.
you've got to say we're one of the good ones.
Yeah. So one of the leading beer runs ever.
Yeah.
From 2022, streaming only.
Yeah. Were you aware of this movie?
I remember when it came out, yeah.
All right.
No, I've never heard of it.
No. It's an Apple TV job, isn't it? Did it get a cinema release?
No, I don't think so. And it had various cast and directors attached to it before it ended up in this incarnation.
And it was directed eventually by Peter Farrelly, who did...
Dumb and Dumber.
Dumb and Dumber, as you were talking about. There's Something About Mary.
Yeah.
And then he veered into this more sort of sentimental, I guess, storytelling. Like we did Green Book, didn't we? That was also him.
Was it?
Yeah.
And that was really good.
Well, was it? I think we were all really surprised that it was.
I think everyone was that it was an Oscar winner.
Yeah. I remember thinking it was okay and there was some okay themes and maybe a little bit of some dodgy politics in it. But
which one was Green Book? The one with the
Viggo
black
Mortensen and Mahershala Ali.
The guy that was turned up to be gay and he was a musician of some sort. Yeah. I like that movie.
Yeah. It was okay, but it didn't. It won everything that year, didn't it? It was.
I didn't know that.
It was a big winner. Maybe,
but we didn't. We've already talked about that movie. This movie.
It's
a different movie.
Is a true story about Chicky. I'll just say from the get go that when I said to my missus we got a Zac Efron movie, she's very excited.
Yeah.
And then when we saw his face, like, he fucking looks like Super Mario.
He's
got a strong mustache going on. But yeah, that's it's amazing. Think Mario.
Yeah. And we're introduced to him.
They're getting pissed.
As a kind of barfly, isn't he?
They are playing literally, is it Soulfinger by the Barflies, is it? Or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's just portrayed as a fucking waster. His old man's giving him loads of shit, just drinking his life away. He turns out
Former military man, but he was stationed in Massachusetts and spent most
he's just a merchant seaman.
With a massive moustache. Have we talked about the moustache?
It is epic. It's an epic moustache.
Very strong moustache gain. Mm. And yeah, he's kind of living his own dream. He's
got like three, four mates. So they're regularly getting pissed up. Yeah. I don't know why Americans drink pitchers of beer. It's fucking weird to me because it's shit beer.
Yeah.
And just buy pints.
Same in Germany, though. They don't. They buy massive pitchers. They know what they're doing with beer in Germany. So I wouldn't,
But they drink Steins, which is a litre, right? Whereas the Americans just drink a pitch because they're too lazy to go to the bar.
Mm.
And they're drinking like Budweiser.
And it's like water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
So we get introduced to him mainly other than getting pissed with his mates, one of whom I think has got polio. Is that why he's got the crutches? In the background, some of their mates have been conscripted and some of them have been enlisted for the Vietnam War because it's 1967.
And Bill Murray is the colonel, who's the bar owner, bartender.
Yeah.
And he's pro-America, flag waving.
All this bar are, they're kind of...
I don't know if it's a veterans bar.
But he was a veteran. He was in 1945, and they talk about how they had the clarity of knowing they were fighting the enemy and who the enemy was, and they were the bad guys. And
they don't say it to the end, though, do they?
No. Well, yeah.
They're hugely patriotic, though.
Yeah.
They're all from the neighbourhood, and it gets them talking about, there's a few kind of fingers being pointed. His sister, we learn from... like the family around the family meal time. Yes.
She comes in and announces that someone's been killed.
Their friend's been killed in Vietnam.
And they're kind of having these debates in the family about she's very anti-war, anti-Vietnam.
Well, they're polar opposites, aren't they?
And and he's kind of, you can't be serious. You've got to back our troops. They're coming home reading this, that there's all anti-war. How does that make them feel?
It's not just anti-war. What he objects to is them being described as baby killers. Cause he's they come back to hear that. And that's happening especially a demonstration that's going to occur that he's going to kind of gatecrash his mates.
So all this backdrop of, it's not quite.
There's a lot of tension.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension. It's small kind of part America. It's not huge demonstrations, but it's in the park and they've got pickets and they've got signs saying all this kind of stuff. And he spots his sister there one time, doesn't he?
Mm. But he kicks over some candles and he stumbles, and that's what kicks off the altercation at the rally. They're just kind of clumsy at first, and then it descends into, well, why aren't you backing us, and what do you want, just people to go around killing everyone? And they're just ideologically so far apart.
Dick, he's this kind of naive idealist, and but a lot of it is about the neighborhood and the local people, and that's the support, because he knows people that are out there.
So one night in a bar he announces that...
They learn one of their friends has died, and they learn another one, this Tommy MIA, is missing in action.
Yeah.
And so that it's in the back of his mind when they have this big night out
that he should be doing something. I mean, he could have signed up, but he wasn't kind of doing that much. He just wanted to make sure that when people came back from fighting, that they knew they'd been appreciated, that they knew that they were still rooting for him in the corner over in our part of town. Don't worry about that. So he has the bright idea of, it's the colonel actually, he says, you know what I like to do? I like to give them all a beer. And he goes, I can do that.
I love that moment because everybody's just laughing and the camera just slightly lingers on Zac Efron, and you can just see for a minute just getting that crazy idea of like, yeah, I could do that.
Hmm.
You could do what? He goes, I could go and give him beer.
Yeah.
And so the plot and the idea is formulated in the fact that he's going to take over a big old bag of beer to his buddies on
the
front line.
There is a bit that, because he sort of wakes up the next day, they have the beers and they cheer it all on, and then the next day he's trying to walk it back a little bit. And then,
as you do.
Yeah,
you know, when like, you've had an idea in the pub that you think was probably a couple of beers, might have been a bit of the beer talk in there, because he's suddenly putting a few obstacles in the way, isn't he? He's going, yeah. Oh, I'm not sure there'd even be a boat going. I'm not even, whereas last night it was all so easy.
But then when his mates say, we never thought you were going anyway, he's like, well, why? Well, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Why did you think I wasn't going, but why didn't you think I was going to go? And then he's like, well, now I'm going to go. So it's, I like the way it flip flops. And then it gets especially harder for him because the parents in the neighborhood are like, well, if you're going to go out there, can you take these, I think it's rosary beads.
Yeah, they're all Bible thumpers.
And
yeah.
a load of other stuff out to these guys.
Irish Catholics, you get that kind of feeling, don't you? They're all, you know, very patriotic Irish Catholics. And then suddenly you're right. Rumors got around and it's almost that, enough people know now that I've kind of got to go.
And then when he goes, it's quite funny because then when he's got this absurd idea that suddenly he's now committed to, and then he goes to like the ship, the stevedores, is it, or whatever, and he says, oh, like, when's the ship going? The guy's like, well, in about 5 hours. Like, I don't suppose they need an oarsman or a boiler man or whatever.
That's it.
It's like
an oil man. Yeah,
yeah, they do, in fact. Yeah. Everything's just lined up for him to do it, but he's got to sail for 2 months, I think.
Yeah, two or 3 months. I think it's going to go via Manila, isn't it? And and then eventually it's gonna hit. No,
who's
Vietnam.
To say it's still going to be going on in 2 months' time when you get...
Yeah, he's so...
Wait, he's going to a fucking war zone. So, he's packed his bag full of the weakest beer ever. I don't know which one it was. Pabst
Blue
wasn't Ribbon, was it?
Easy to see, was it? Because I did like looking at the old can design.
Yeah.
But I couldn't see the label. It certainly wasn't Budweiser.
The cans, actually, you can still kind of get cans like that in Germany. You know, they're huge, big cans, and they've got the ring pull
rather than the flip.
Yeah. When I was in Cambodia, they had the ring pull, and you could win more cans from the ring pull.
One.
If you got a gold one, you'd win more cans or money or whatever. So that was pretty good. But he's off then in this big bag that the colonel's given him. He says, bring it in this bag, because then the boys will know it's from us as well. And it's got the name of the pub on the side, I think. So he takes that down.
We're not on board the ship for the full 2 months.
We don't even any of it. No, he's just there, aren't we?
It's actually a fairly good shot, because it's fairly drab artistically, this movie, but there's a good transition from the New Jersey, I think it is, to Saigon, just in one frame. I was like, all right, we're there. So
yeah, he's just arguing about shore leave, isn't he, for 3 days.
So. Well, and he gets off the boat and 3 days. And then basically he straight finds like people who know his mate straight away, don't they?
Yeah,
he meets the guy in Saigon who's doing the road control thingy, the traffic warden dude.
Yeah, him? Oklahoma.
He calls him Oklahoma because the guy's like, oh, you're Oklahoma.
Already seen one guy off the port, straight off the port.
Yeah, yeah, the military police.
One guy. The
MPs, yeah, the MP guy is like, oh, yeah, do you know this guy? Yeah,
they take him and he turns up.
Are you battalion 27, whatever? Yes. Yeah. Who's asking? Oh, do you know the so-and-so? Okay, well done.
He starts handing out beers to people.
I was constantly worried he was going to run out way too early.
Well, he can't believe that he's here and doing this, and nor can anybody else. They're all like a little bit aggressive. Look, what the fuck are you here for?
The movie's still playing it all for laughs, but there will come a time when it's like, seriously, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, because he has to go to... He basically gets further and further into the war.
He meets the first guy and it's all laughs and gives him beers. But then the guy's like, just go fucking home. This is a war zone. What you're doing. And coincidentally, we also see his superior officer turns up, and through this sort of semi-believable in the 60s case of kind of,
are you in the CIA?
Mistaken identity, sort of believes he might be in the CIA, which then he traffics on this kind of guise that he's got as a CIA to get further into the country.
And he does
eventually get way up north to the LZ.
But he meets, while he's in Saigon, he meets this guy, traffic warden bloke, who becomes known as Oklahoma, and he kind of becomes the emotional heart of it later, because he meets up with him when he's back in Saigon.
He also ends up going to where the journalists are staying. Russell Crowe, where
he's looking big and
huge, isn't he?
That's how he looks these days, apparently. He's just
it's a big unit.
Big boy, yeah.
He's a war correspondent.
This was the real place.
Yeah.
Graham Greene stayed there. I think he wrote The Quiet American there.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And, you know, Dickie gives him a hard time saying, why are you reporting so negatively from here?
He sort of repeats his, like, naively patriotic spiel about, well, they're in the army or they're in the military, so you should just support them regardless of anything. You like, people at home don't want to read this shit about... The war, like what's actually happening, you know, it's just got this like...
Well, they have an argument because Lyndon Johnson is on telly telling everybody it's going to be fine and all this stuff. And the journalists are like, what a fucking bunch of bullshit that is. And Dickie's giving him a load of shit.
Like Trump, isn't he? Just saying shit.
And he's like, oh, you know, why aren't you supporting people?
Got to respect the office. Even if you don't like the man, you've got to respect the office. But they clearly don't got to respect the office because they're giving it the truth as they see it and the truth as it is.
Well, that's literally because Russell Crowe says it isn't the truth that hurts us, it's the lying that hurts. Yeah. And that's what he actually says to him.
And they tell him there's no way, you know, we can't, we're banned from going up into the sun.
LZ.
That's it, Jane, is it?
Yeah.
LZ Jane in the north or something.
And he's like, okay, some of my buddies might be up there. So he, like you say, he exploits this thing about being in the CIA.
Well, he says he's a tourist and then he doesn't correct anybody when they say, okay.
Because he goes in and just goes up to the desk, doesn't he, and organises some transport. And the guy looks at him and he says, just go and get your fucking commanding officer. So the guy comes back and says, you're a fucking civilian. And he just kind of looks at him and he goes, you're one of those guys.
They never tell me anything and they don't check it.
This other guy is just constantly badgering him to try and get him into, will you put any word for me so I can get into Langley? And he's like, what's Langley?
He's no idea, is he?
But eventually when he does get up to LZ Jane, it's a different kind of thing.
Now it's
going
like,
on because
no, you
he's
shouldn't
in
be
a
here.
Very active war zone. And when he calls his mate back, he gets himself all like hiding under a blanket and all this stuff. But you see his mate has had to run across an active battlefield, like literally dodging bullets.
He gets the call, doesn't he? He goes, oh, it's so-and-so, you know, his mate there. And he goes, yeah, and he, you want me to come now? Do you not want me to wait till sort of like after dark?
And when they
goes,
think he's CIA.
We need them now because they're frightened of upsetting the CIA guy. Because rumour is, if you upset the CIA guy, you're going to find yourself on the front line in the worst possible shitstorm. So they're like, right, fucking hell, we better do it. And he's still down the pub, really, in his mind. Mm. He's still very much, is this going to be a laugh?
He doesn't get it.
And then so when he springs out, ta-da, like, you know, it's predictably an anticlimax. Well, Rick is, you know, it's Duggan, gives him an absolute bellyful.
Yeah.
And eventually then he's dragged onto the front line. That's the only place for him with Duggan in a trench.
And they're being shot at as they run back into position. They find themselves in a ditch. He does all night.
One of the guys says, you don't seem to care about being here. We would rather be anywhere else but here.
And you don't have to be here.
You came here voluntarily.
And he did say in the morning, then he goes, some of those guys, it's the first time I've seen them do anything, you know, first kind of smirk or smile any of them had, the fact that you've come here with a load of beer, because they do. And he goes, sorry, it's a bit warm.
Well, like, there's all kinds of stories, isn't there? Because there's another guy who actually volunteered for two more tours because when he went back, people were
so
maladjusted him and he couldn't get back into it. So he's back out on the front line. And anyway, so they take a picture in the morning when the battle is over. There's napalm, I think, dropped in the forest, is there?
Yeah.
Or is that later?
No,
he sees it getting...
It's quite nice in the blue and orange, like it looks quite nice.
So he manages there then to give one of the guys, or this is a second guy from...
Well, they take the photo, don't they?
Yeah,
a beer from the neighbourhood and kind of he's saying, you know, we just wanted to support you. But he's slowly realising at this point, this is a little bit fucking crazy and this isn't, you know, quite what I thought I was signing up for. But it doesn't deter him anymore. He still wants to go and see other friends.
He's got to get back to...
He's got the 3-day ticking clock, but also they find out, he's rumbled that he's not fucking CIA.
Well, they rumble this when he's getting a helicopter back with a real CIA guy who's threatening a Vietnamese guy for intelligence in the helicopter above the trees, above the jungle and everything, and he drops him out of it. It's horrible. And
it's a very bad CGI shot of him dangling first when they're doing that bit, but then when they drop him, it's a practical effect and the shoes fall off. I really appreciated that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Because they get the guy to talk. They eventually, he says to the translator, he said, just fucking ask, just tell him to say what we need to
say
hear.
Something, yeah. Say something.
And so this guy panically just screams out something in Vietnamese and they're kind of satisfied. And then the CIA they just like tosses him out anyway. Yeah. And he's like horrified.
Yeah.
And then this is what
our country are up to.
And then attention comes on to Chicky because they realize just as he's getting out, he goes, who are you with? And he goes, same as you. And he goes, which company? Who's your handler? Like, you know, who's your travel agent?
Yeah.
And he goes, same as you.
Same as yours, yeah.
We see guy, he's not buying it, the CIA guy. And Chicky's clever enough, actually. And
he's alert enough to realize
after waiting for a trip out, he goes, suddenly it's like, yeah, okay, we'll drop you off. And he realizes in the back of the van that he was going to get into, the CIA guy was waiting for him. Mm. And obviously he's just seen him throw him out of a plane. Yeah. He doesn't want this information getting out there. So he runs into the jungle of Vietnam, which is, you know, not a great place to be.
Well, he's got like 24 kilometers to get until to like some helicopter base that will then get him back to Saigon. And that's when there's elephants escaping from napalm. There's also
CIA agents after him.
There's a scene where he comes across a little girl. He tries to sort of smile at her and kick a ball to her. And she just screams.
He's starting to realize there just how feared the very view of him is.
It's a bit like that Mitchell and Webb thing. Are we the bad guys with the Nazis? Yeah. Like they stood there in Nazi uniforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He does manage to make his way back to Saigon.
He does.
And he goes back to the hotel, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and they drop and his tet.
He gets it now. Mm. He gets why they're reporting what... He's no longer this...
He's seen lots of atrocities.
Idiot.
He's seen... Yeah.
And not only that, there's a truce, there's a ceasefire. And he's like, no, there isn't.
Yeah.
I've just been there like 6 hours ago and... There's no ceasefire. No. You should tell them up in the north where they're dropping napalm and everything. And the journalists all look at him like, have you been there? He's like, yeah, look at the picture.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, buy this guy drinks all night. Ta-da-da. And that's now he actually becomes friends with Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
And it is Tet and they drop it. And I don't know much about Vietnam, but I do know the Tet Offensive was when, you know, a sort of New Year type celebration in which it was
the attack on Saigon
that they wouldn't attack. And obviously they did. And the Americans were very underprepared and suffered a lot of casualties.
Yeah. And this night and he finds Oklahoma. Eventually
he sees, well, yeah, Oklahoma's killed and my missus is very upset about that, and that's his real... I took it in the movie that was the symbolic bit where he's like, this is fucking outrageous. He
also
sees an American tank
that
shoot,
as well,
and it's reported the other way, and he's like, no, I fucking saw it, I watched it with my own eyes.
Where he knows now that not only are they doing savage things, but they're directly lying to the American public. Yeah. He knows because it was an American tank. And, you know, with wars and stuff, with disinformation being such a big thing around war
propaganda.
And the culture war and all that at the moment, that's one of the interesting themes in the movie.
Well, it takes Russell Crowe really to bring him up to...
I don't know how he survived because he just stood constantly taking photos like, get fucking undercover.
He sort of brings him up to speed and says, you know, it's a lot easier to say that the Vietnamese did it than it was an inside job, and to destroy the confidence of all the people that are trying to work and trying to...
Well, the troops on the front line for a start.
Start, I mean, on the guys front line, but also the guys that are working with the Vietnamese in Saigon, in the south of Vietnam, who, you know, on the side of the Americans and everything. So it was tough times. They get caught in crossfire and have to hide out until the next day. Russell Crowe, as you say, still snapping away photographs, and he's gone to the embassy this day for his tickets out, because when he got back to Saigon, the boat has gone.
Yeah.
And the embassy's gone now as well.
And now the embassy, he was meant to go back there at 10 o'clock next day. Now the embassy's gone. So he wants... Then there's a huge kind of mushroom cloud that goes up, and he realizes this big ammunition base is absolutely blown up. and he's goes, I've got a mate there. I need to get back over there. So him and Russell Crowe jump in a card, and with Russell Crowe's press pass, they manage to get through.
It's a bit dicey, but they get there.
And he finds his mate, who again is just like no sense of humour or joy about too much about seeing him, as much as he would, you know, love probably a drink with him another time. He's like, fuck's sake, you know, Chicky, this isn't a joke, you know. And just as he's pulling away, he's again a bit nervous about, you haven't given him a beer, you know. He just lobs him out one right at the end. Therefore, go that way and then don't even give him the beer. That would have been,
it was, I think he put two crates worth of beer, didn't he, in his bag. So, but it was a bit like Father Christmas's beers. Bag, wasn't it, that it just kept being refilled,
like the room of requirements or something like that, you know, the magic bag. But we could drink those tonight, do you know what I mean?
They'd have gone down quick over there.
So he manages, after all of this, he gets home and he gives the colonel a bit of a, they're all cheersing him and, oh, you've been to Nam and blah blah blah, and he's like, tells them it's not that fucking great actually. The stuff that you're reading,
war turns out to be pretty bad.
Well, he says, you know, the guys in that saved us in two world wars, absolute legends, and we were fighting, and he says, I'll put these guys up with any of them, but I'm just not so
sure. At least
sure
we knew who we were fighting.
We're saving the world this time. You know, that we're doing anything really great. Those guys, those, you know, brave young kids who are sent out on the front lines to go and fight, but the politicians are the ones there. And he's starting to grow up now. He's starting to understand.
Well, he's reconciled with his sister, but it's come at the cost of like being scarred by what he's witnessed, that the knowing that the US government that he idolized has lied to him and the public. And he's also living with the guilt that Minogue, that the guy that he was sent out to get there, he was having doubt. He enlisted and he was having doubts about whether he should go.
Talked him into
it. Dickie talked him into it. And obviously we learn this right at the end of the movie, that he's carried this guilt. It's quite an emotional scene actually, where he's actually,
he'd been given the rosary. That's the one, he's been given the rosary bead by his mother, and he returns them and breaks down and apologizes to her for telling him
to go
through with it, to have the, you know, you'll be fine, blah blah blah. And he's like, I wish I'd just fucking let him, you know, doubt, not listen to me, listen to himself. He shouldn't have gone out there. He didn't need to go out there.
It was quite a heavy scene, and the mother's incredibly strong and gracious and gives him a hug and everything, and says, you know, don't worry about it. But
and he has I think he shares the last beer with his sister, is that right?
That's right, on the bench.
And he says, I'm going to do a little less drinking and a little more thinking,
a little less conversation.
And we also then cut to real photographs on
the real guy
on the credits, or just before the credits,
side by side with the one from the film with the real one. And so the guy hadn't died, had he?
No,
the one that they
none of them have died.
No, the one guy,
Tommy.
He was dead, because he has that conversation right at the end with, just, he goes, you haven't heard?
Yes, he did die. That guy did die. The one that went AOL.
He
was dead.
That's because that was the one that he...
The rosary beads.
So, a few of his mates he met and they made it back. I think two or three of them didn't, from the neighborhood. There was another couple of scenes where people from the neighborhood over or whatever would go, what the fuck's he doing there? The one part is when he's walking just in the middle of the track, isn't it? And one guy from his neighborhood or a neighborhood over is driving the car, and he talks him into giving him a lift back. And he's like, just fucking madness to see you here, like, you know. And it's a mad story. I mean,
it's true. It's such an idiotic story, really, but it is true.
It makes
it quite something, doesn't it?
It makes it really kind of crazy.
How did you get on with the movie, though?
I liked it, I must say. I didn't dislike the movie. It wasn't anything that I would rush in and want to watch again, but I liked the performances, I liked the story, and I liked the fact that eventually it started picking away at some more serious themes and everything, and obviously the horrors of war and how, you know,
there's quite a lot of wars really bad, isn't it? And you were like, I get that.
You can get brushed away by all the propaganda at home and how that swell of activity and, you know, people watching from pubs on TVs at home going, you got to support our boys and everything, but the truth of it It was very different when he got over there. And somebody as hard-lined as that, somebody who's hard-lined enough to say, I support our boys so much, I'm going to go and take him a beer on the front line to tell him well done, is kind of reversed his thoughts.
In it. Yeah. I mean, it is really just a stupid.
I couldn't understand why he wasn't, because he was a military man.
Mm. Why, so why wasn't was he not signed up?
I didn't really get that.
It was, there was, the draft was like a sort of lottery system, and then people were enlisting, but he obviously didn't enlist because he was a slacker. So, but yeah, instead risked his life to give guys a bunch of fucking warm beer. But well,
he talked about
at least it meant something in the course of the movie. It, this stupid story, they hang quite an interesting framework over it. And I had like zero expectations. I never knew about this movie or anything. And then the title made it sound like it was going to be awful. So when it wasn't, I was like, oh, right, okay.
So
I was,
expectations low. So maybe that's the way to go
into
this.
And then I found out, well, the critics hated this movie.
Yeah, they did.
They absolutely hated it. And that makes me want to just like it even more because, you know, fuck you. But yeah, it's not
really
awful.
Hated it. I mean, don't get me wrong, I don't think it was amazing, but
it's
it had
like
a few
six
funny,
and a half out of ten.
It had a few funny bits. It had a few good feel factors. It had a few eye-opening scenes where the futility of war is really the Oklahoma bit. Yeah. The fact that at the beginning it kind of goes through, yeah, war, man, yeah, support the troops and move to America. And then you see these people in the park and you think, fucking all these hippies with their protest. But then you actually start thinking and you go through the movie and you think, also the fact that, what the fuck are you doing here, you bellend, really? Delivering beers to your mates when there's LZ Jane, when there's bullets flying.
Yeah.
But also,
it's kind of a metaphor for America's involvement in the war, though, right? A little bit, because like, why were they there? They were just getting involved in something they didn't understand. And
Cold War, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I kind of was actively hating it.
Oh, wait.
For the first two thirds.
Even with Zac Efron?
Yeah, I think I was disappointed with Zac in it. I think his moustache had me off kilter. But when he started, when he got back to Saigon, I got on board with it and I actually started to appreciate it. I think he did some good acting, a bit like Team America, like the best actor ever. And when he got emotional, it's hard not to get emotional when you see Zac getting emotional. So it did, I thought it was just like whimsy and nonsense at first, and then it did have more to it. I quite like Russell Crowe in it as well. I like fat Russell Crowe.
He was good.
He's got presence, hasn't he?
But it was okay. Like you say, 6.5 out of 10 is about where it
is. On a Sunday afternoon, just sitting down, it was great.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
The fact that it's a true story probably makes it a little more interesting.
The true story bit of it annoys me.
It is annoying.
What it did, so I don't know much about Vietnam, really. So it got me like reading then about Vietnam and stuff
down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, so that was good. I got to learn some things.
I have to say, for me, the fact that it's a real story, it actually makes it better, because I know people like that back home, where, which is a human paradox, if you will, but they're too lazy to do anything creative or they wouldn't put effort for themselves and to better themselves, but they would put a lot of effort and they would find a way to do something really, really stupid.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes way. Yeah. So I know quite a few of my mates back home that they never had a job.
But they would do something like this.
Mate, get a job and do this. No, but then they would go and try
set up this elaborate, stupid
bank. They would do all this. Exactly.
That requires patience and ingenuity.
Find a way to save money to go to America, to go to Miami for 6 weeks or something and play the World Poker Tour or something like that. So
I like the way you could, in those days, with the help of a bogus CIA ID, like travel the world.
He didn't
like
even have an ID. It was all implied.
It was just about a tourist,
I was gonna say, it's just about believable. It did actually happen. So crazy.
Do you know how many Vietnam War vets it takes to change a light bulb?
Go on.
Oh, you don't know, you weren't there, man.
Okay.
No. I don't know. That's
And the soundtrack was all right as well.
The soundtrack was very good, yeah, it was good.
Hard to do anything different with the visual aesthetic or the sound of a Vietnam movie now, but this movie did at least do a few of those things.
Yeah.
But it had that sort of glossy thing that streaming movies have.
Right, so at the start, before it when it was still set in his neighborhood, it had that ultra high definition thing that makes it look fake.
Really fake.
Really like not believable on the screen.
But a lot of the movie is set on location, and that is really good. So yeah, strong recommend.
Strong. Yeah, very strong. Yeah, and strong mustache.
Little Lunch?
Little Lunch. Hilarious.
It's Australian. Let's just get that out of the way.
Okay.
It is from the same people who brought us The Investigators. Do you remember that? Brian asked us to review.
He's still really anti us because we didn't like that as much as we should have.
I quite like The Investigators, I believe. But I'm not sure they were all from Australia. There was a couple of dodgy accents in there. But basically, this is the tales of children describing...
It's a mockumentary, like The Office.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like that, with kids around their lunchtimes.
Yes. Based on a series of books. Yeah. Is it their lunch break or is it the break in between?
Recess.
Yeah, recess.
The recess.
Sure. So recess pieces.
This was the episode that I asked us to watch was...
Episode two. Yeah.
And it's kind of split into two parts. So you have two different stories. We watched the first story, but there was another one talking about onesies and twosies, which was how many bars you swing on the monkey bar. But we were just all enraptured.
The hilarity of that.
We were all enraptured about the lunch session that they were on, and it was about what they get.
It
for
was
lunch.
About one particularly spoilt little brat.
Atticus.
Yeah. Who didn't like the look of the food that his yaya,
which is grandma.
Yeah, that was what they called John Wick, wasn't it?
Yaya
didn't like the look of the food that she would put in his lunchbox.
His parents had gone to New Zealand.
They'd abandoned him, rightly so.
Left him with it, and they speculated that grandma was like either Turkish, Russian, or Chinese or something. They didn't know. And yeah, she
didn't cook the same normal food as
she liked
he's
everything
used to.
Pickled.
Yeah, pickles rule.
Yeah.
Even pickled biscuits. Not for little kids. Not kids don't like everything.
I can't remember a time in my life when I haven't enjoyed a pickled onion.
Okay, wow. Well, the Atticus, Atticus as we'll learn a little bit later, may have liked it or may not. He wasn't very brave in trying, but it would skip around in various locations and kind of interview kids in various relaxed states as they're lying on the grass and saying, this is the best day of my life because I got a chicken wing or something.
Well, the central story is that it's basically every day. Atticus coming in and trying to find different ways to avoid eating the lunch that he's been sent in by his grandma, or like not sending it in and ordering a bucket of KFC going up to the teacher's staff room and making jam sandwiches, or stealing a bit of everybody else's lunch and doing his own. And then on the last day, he's going to actually find out that grandma has sent a load of stuff in. Everybody's tried it. Dan, you were very concerned about allergies, which the program did address.
It did. Thank goodness for that. Because, on the last day after he's at one point, as you say, even ordered out, he was able to forget his lunch again on the Friday. But Yahoo crazy or whatever, she dropped the food off.
I remember
time.
Him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yahoo crazy. That was a real.
Yeah. Yahoo serious.
Yahoo serious.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yaya turns up and with lunch.
Not just for
everyone,
him, but for everyone.
For everybody.
And they're, as he's looking,
they're also
not
looking,
just
horrified.
One plate of absolute dog crap. He's looking at like the whole school having it now, or his whole year.
Here comes the message.
And
they're poking at it, calling
it
Yaya's meat wraps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But they try Yaya's meat wraps and
it's sensational.
Delicious. Tangy, spicy, just enough flavour.
Yeah.
And they're all into it. And then
Atticus realises he could have had lunch all week long if he hadn't been such an ungrateful cunt.
Exactly. That was the message. That's what I took from it.
I didn't actually try it. I just didn't like the look of it. And so when I tried it, it wasn't that bad. And he's a real eater as well.
They have the group portion that Yaya Toure has brought in. And they eat all that, and he looks, and the one kid with the football, soccer ball, has eaten the last one. He's Devo, but then he realizes he's got his own lunchbox.
Yeah,
thank goodness.
With the remaining
with
rations,
more meat wraps.
So he's able to eat his grand's flaps.
Yeah,
and so what this is attempting possibly to do is to bring a moral to the story of try your
eat your
food.
Damn food.
Yeah, don't say you don't like it before you've even tried it. Mm.
But it done in a reasonably humorous way, because I think the writing is actually quite sharp and it's all like lit and all that looks really professional.
So I didn't think a lot of the kids. I thought they were pretty good. Some of those.
I thought
they weren't actor-y stage types, which okay. I appreciated.
Joking about it being Australian, this is actually okay. The bit that I wouldn't want to watch the fucking single minute more, but this actually for a kid's thing.
If my kids were into it, you know, if Nelly wanted to watch it, then I would go sit down and watch it. And you wonder how much of that is still alive in the playground today. That might be an interesting conversation. Do you kind of swap lunches still, or do you check out what other kids
are? I can always tell.
I can remember being a kid, and you know, I'll give you some of my crisps of some of yours and all that.
You can't remember being a kid.
I can also tell exactly when you put down a plate of food in front of your kid, child, daughter, and I can sense straight away that she's already made up her mind that she doesn't like
it.
Yeah.
And I fucking hate it. It's a real pet peeve of mine. So when you see it on the screen, I'm like, you fuckers eat that fucking food.
You made your fool.
Just try it. Just fucking try it before you decide.
And it is. So it's trying to, you know, encourage kids to maybe come to reflect on their own ideas about lunch and things, as Atticus does. And it goes,
I think what's difficult about food
bad.
Is like some days, even something you really love, you just don't
fancy it.
And as a kid, you can't really articulate that, or your parents won't.
Well, plus they've got no choice. This is what I've given you. You fucking eat it.
I remember my sandwiches at school were just like cut into little triangles, and they were just
full of cum.
No, tended not to be, but they were about as appealing to me because they just looked, and we used to just lob them.
I just fucking eat anything.
Lob them. We wouldn't
really
because if you took them home uneaten, then you get questioned over that. You know, you haven't eaten your lunch, or you'll eat it now. And you're like, no, I didn't want it then. I certainly don't want it now. So it just used to be like going away.
What was so bad about what kind
of, it was just plain sort of white bread. Ham sandwich
sounds
or
amazing.
Cheese or whatever.
This Shabley isn't chilled.
Exactly. It was all those kind of, no, but we were, just, you know, kids, you wanted a bag of crisps and a, you know, you looked at
fizzy
another
laces.
Kid, fizzy laces, and you wanted all that kind of rubbish. And you looked at another kid having, you know.
What did you have for lunch today, this very day?
Today I had pasta.
Okay.
I had pasta and I had a little side of nuts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Chris, what about you? You're grafting.
Yeah, I just made myself a salad after work.
Nice.
No lunch. Or is it after work lunch for you?
Lunch into dinner.
Dinch.
Wait.
Well, we had roast.
Can
we have him put down? We had roast beef yesterday, I had some leftover roast beef. I stuck it in the air fryer with some bread and some cheese.
That sounds disgusting.
It was amazing.
Air fryers, like microwave, isn't it?
Put them in a fucking landfill. I hate them.
Amazing. Yeah,
they're probably amazing. I can't.
I'm not massive.
I can't get on board.
Yeah, I don't.
We've got
that's
soup
because you have an air fried.
We've got soup club at work.
Our
team. And today I was on the rota to provide the team with lunch.
What soup did you provide?
Made mulligatawny.
Oh,
what's in that?
That is
so we started
gamey,
off,
isn't it?
No, we started off with onion, celery, sweet potato, and carrot.
Don't you fucking hate celery?
Yeah.
I'm on board. You won't taste it.
Cook that down. And then curry powder. Mango chutney.
Right. This is soup.
Yeah. Vegetables. Right. So this is veggie. Vegetable stock. Liter vegetable stock.
Yeah.
And we'd had a veggie curry for dinner. So I made extra rice. And then you get a portion of rice and you put that in the soup as well. Only after you've blended. So you blend it and then add the rice later.
Wow.
So it's like a curry soup.
Did it go down well?
Decent. Yeah. It was good. I was a bit worried it was going to be a bit sweet because of the mango chutney, but it was decent. It was a hit.
It was a hit.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
What about the person who didn't do their turn on Soup Club? Have they been banished or?
No.
Yeah.
Wow. So we don't talk about that anymore. No, then.
Let's just end that there. So you got one little Atticus in your own place. Sort of just being. But this is Little Lunch. It's not the worst kids thing
it's
we've ever
thermonuclear
seen.
Thermonuclear recommend.
Yeah. So there you go. Wow.
Yeah. So your missus is voting next week, isn't she?
We're going to try and...
We're not doing that.
She says, oh God, what have they picked? Or
if
whatever,
your missus doesn't, then it's either Kaylee or Yana.
Yeah.
Worse still, Cindy.
Oh. Okay, I can ask her, but you might not enjoy this.
Well,
I'm telling you
from the start. It's a Mad Mum's week.
Could be a Mad Mum's week. We'll see how that goes. That could be fun. Yeah. I'm up for a chick flick or a rom-com or something.
Well, yeah, just whatever she wants to nominate. If she's not impressed with the movie
choices, then...
Yeah, she's been vocal. No. She's been vocal about the stuff we've been watching. So let's put the emphasis on her.
You've roped her into this now, Chris. And we're going to go for it.
Cool. Okay, right, look forward to that next week. All that remains...
Buckle your belt. Yeah.
Is to say Sidey signing out.
Reek saying goodbye.
Chris is none.
Dan's gone.